Hello, and welcome to This Week I Learned, your audio guide to the most surprising discoveries and fascinating studies of the week. I'm your host, Lauren Hansen. This week I learned why we say hello when we pick up the phone. This is actually an old discovery, but I was curious because my daughter recently started saying the word.
Hello.
And I wondered why we say it in the first place. So I found a delightfully detailed answer in an article from the New York Times in 1992. The invention of the telephone was the work of several people, but it was Alexander Graham Bell who first applied for the patent in 1876 and gets the credit. Thomas Edison developed and improved upon the device, specifically separating the part you listen out of and the part you talk into. It is also Edison who put hello into common usage. Of course, the word itself predates the telephone. People were using it back in the 1830s, though not as a greeting, but rather an exclamation point to get someone's attention or to express surprise, like, hello, what do you think you're doing? When the telephone came along, Edison envisioned the device as a business tool that would have one line permanently open. The trick was how to signal to the open line that you wanted to speak. The idea of a bell was thrown around, but Edison suggested using the word hello to get someone's attention, and that stuck. The problem was Alexander Graham Bell had other ideas. Bell insisted that ahoy be the correct way to answer the telephone. Now, ahoy predates hello by about a century, but the words are very similar. Ahoy is derived from the Dutch word hoi, meaning hello, though it's mainly used in nautical circles. But Edison had a bit of an edge in this battle because he helped equip the nation with telephone exchanges. But his ground game really took off after 1878 when the first telephone book was printed. The book included directions for how to answer and end a phone call, suggesting a firm and cheery hello to start the conversation, and a simple that is all to signal its end. And with that, hello became the standard greeting and ahoy was pushed out of the race, relegated to the waters. But Alexander Graham Bell never let go of the word, and reportedly used ahoy on the telephone for the rest of his life.
Ahoy, hoy!
This week I learned that it's hard for everyone to make eye contact while holding a conversation. That's right, it's not just you. That's because eye contact has a unique effect on your cognitive control processes. According to a Japanese study outlined in the British Psychology Society Research Digest, looking into someone's eyes is so mentally stimulating that it hijacks your brain, making it difficult to carry on an interesting conversation. In this study, 26 participants were asked to look directly at a stranger's face on a screen while simultaneously performing a verb generation task. The stranger's faces were video animated, so they did appear natural. They were blinking and breathing. And those faces were either making eye contact or they had their eyes averted. On each test, the participant looked at the face, heard a noun, and then had to respond out loud with a verb that could be used with that noun in a sentence. Researchers gave a range of nouns that would be easier or more complicated to respond to depending on their associations. So, like an example of an easy task might be milk, since it's so associated with the verb drink. Researchers found that eye contact made it harder for participants to respond to the more difficult word tasks, so it wasn't across the board. They suggest that eye contact drains our general cognitive resources, the kind we draw on when speaking becomes more engaging or difficult. So, the more complicated the story, the more likely you are to need to break eye contact. This week I learned that Abraham Lincoln's famous Gettysburg Address was just an afterthought, and there's actually another Gettysburg Address you've probably never heard of. The Battle of Gettysburg is considered the most important engagement of the Civil War, ultimately turning the tide in the Union's favor. Those three brutal days in July 1863 were a crushing defeat for the Confederacy, which lost more than a third of General Lee's army. But the Union army didn't emerge unscathed and lost tens of thousands of men as well. In the fall of 1863, a Pennsylvania-led commission assembled a burial ground for all of the soldiers who had fallen at Gettysburg. For the official dedication of the new National Cemetery to be held on November 19, 1863, officials asked Edward Everett to give the main speech. Now, Everett was a scholar and a statesman. As governor of Massachusetts in 1835, Everett revolutionized New England's schools by helping to create the state's first board of education. By the 1860s, he was well respected as a distinguished public speaker. So the plan for the National Cemetery dedication was for Everett to give a lengthy oration, which would be followed by a few remarks by the president. Really, it was Everett's show. And his speech started quite eloquently. Standing beneath the serene sky, overlooking these broad fields, now reposing from the labors of the waning year, the mighty Alleghenies dimly towering before us, the graves of our brethren beneath our feet, it is with hesitation that I raise my poor voice to break the eloquent silence of God and nature. Over the course of 2 hours, Everett spoke more than 13,000 words, and the crowd was reportedly rapt, tied breathlessly to every utterance, tears streaming down their faces. And President Lincoln was said to have loved the speech as well. When Everett was done, there was a brief hymn, and then the president rose to speak. In under 3 minutes, using only 272 words, Lincoln delivered his most famous speech. He transformed the Union cause into a struggle for liberty and equality.
67 years ago, our forefathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal.
Lincoln's speech would be one for the books as much for its shocking brevity as for its content. As for Everett, he easily conceded to the president's superior remarks. The scholar even wrote the president and asked for a copy of his speech. In the letter, Everett said, "I should be glad if I could flatter myself that I came as near to the central idea of the occasion in 2 hours as you did in 2 minutes." This week I learned that the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration, has its very own theme song. According to Atlas Obscura, the song is called The People of the FAA, and it's a catchy little ditty touting pride in the honest work of keeping people safe in the skies.
We want to help you get back home in a jumbo jet or flying along. We make it safe up in the sky so you relax when you fly.
The song was written in the 1980s by a man named John Hanks, who was the public affairs director of the FAA. Hanks was the type of person who would dress up as Elvis Presley and perform at annual FAA parties, so he was naturally the guy who would start a government band. But the theme song wasn't his first attempt at a federal tune. At a time when he was trying to drum up support for a savings bond drive, he thought a performance would help. He posted an ad in the FAA newsletter and put together an all-female group of 10 employees who sang Bonds Will Keep You Together, a familiar-sounding song to any Captain and Tennille fans out there.
Bonds, bonds will keep you together. Catch them in whenever the time comes to
There was such enthusiasm for the group known as the FAA Chorale that Hanks was inspired to write the FAA theme song, which was a huge hit within the agency. They even went on a tour, playing at Nancy Reagan's Just Say No anti-drug rallies, among other events. Today, the People of the FAA remains the only theme song of any government agency. And that does it for this week's episode of This Week I Learned. Look out for new episodes every Friday on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. To read more about any of the facts I've mentioned or check out the rest of the week's audio series, go to theweek.com/podcasts. And if you like what you hear, subscribe, tell a friend, or give us a rating and a review on iTunes. I'm Lauren Hansen, and thank you so much for listening.